Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
Are we going to sing a Dumpty Dum?
Oh, crumbs, yes.
I'm not going to, with mics too close, but...
I don't know who's got the finest larynx here, who should maybe count
Nicola.
Us in. Give us a...
Come on, I didn't stop you yesterday.
No, I didn't. But me, I recorded it yesterday.
Well, we actually have Dan, the recording man, who's recording us, so...
Come on, then. I thought, actually, it did get a bit funereal yesterday.
Yeah. So let's do it. Jaunty, yes. Jaunty. Yeah. Oh, that's a good plan.
Yeah, are we done?
Are we always able to do that?
Right. One, two, three.
Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, dumpty, da, da. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, diddly, dum. Dumpty, diddly, dumpty, diddly, dumpty, diddly, dum. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, diddly, dum.
This week's Dumpty Dum is from the live recording in Birmingham. Well, what an introduction it had too.
And this is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the windblown Eurovision power ballad who is known as Stephen Bowden, and I'm here today with the woman with je ne sais quoi who is...
Jacqueline Berthaud from Brittany in France. And we are, of course, joined by the epitome of British comedy, well, and a bit of American. And that's you, our lovely caller-inners, email-inners and WhatsApp-inners. On this episode, we have a very charming group of caller-inners. We hear from Tracy in California, who wants to find someone to rough Rob up. Ooh. Jan Mitchell from Vancouver, who is wondering, what is the future for Helen? It's complicated. Paula from Philadelphia, a new caller-inner who defends Lee. Jen, Ambridge Pony Club, who is not a happy bunny. David Thomas, who has found the week difficult. Rob Williams, who wasn't drunk, but is explaining about Helen again. Witherspoon, who is having another mini meetup in New York, lucky man. Claire from Clapham, who is playing some very tiny violins. And Glyn Fullerlove, who will be glad when Eurovision is over.
With so many calls, we won't have time for one of my two-minute histories. But don't worry, they'll be back next week with the history of Brookfield Farm. But we do have Tweet of the Week from Purple Pumpkin, our Theo, and we have the social roundup from our Philippa.
But first, let's look at the week in Ambridge from our Suey, Queen or Tart.
Hello, lovely people. It's Suey, Queen or Tart on the Twitters here, and another week in Ambridge. I trust this week we're operating with no technical issues. I'm crossing my fingers, and thanks very much to B&Q for sorting things out and getting something for you to listen to last week. Just our luck, it was the week I was doing both. Anyway, it's a new week then, and hooray, it's a Kerry week. Leonard volunteered for a repair cafe in Penny Hassett as part of the big help out. He did not volunteer, but got his arm twisted into being Eddie's partner in a comedy double act. Eddie's determined he's going to make Leonard funny. Oh dear. The coronation illuminations is apparently good for all aspects of the Bridge Farm business. Rebecca, a reporter from the Borchester Echo, wanted an interview with Helen. She reared up like a honey badger and snarled at her. David came to the rescue to be photographed and tried to get an interview on the Brookfield initiatives. So sufficiently dull for Rebecca to talk to Helen about her cheese making. How very stultifying. Then they got it all wrong in the article. David is not a happy camper and wants the caption clarified. Maybe he can get an article out of it. Fat chance. Linda booted Ardil out of Ambridge Hall so that Ryland could stay for the Eurovision show. Regardless of how plausible it is that he'd go to Ambridge on the way to Liverpool when he's already there. To pacify Ryland, Lindy has passed him off to Linda as his new host at the Dower House. I foresee much gin in her future at least. Sounds like Lindy Bottom will also need spirits to get through the vetting rehearsals for Eurovision. So far, we have Kirsty and Helen making Spanish fritters whilst panicking about whether Rob, no tuna bake Titchener, is back. Leonard and Eddie as the English with a series of jokes delivered as impersonations of Linda and Harrison, which Ryland will never understand. They were being hilarious, according to Tracy. I'm not so sure I agree with her. There's the Brookfield yodelers, and Freddie's doing a mini mix of Swedish bangers. Jazza and Tracy should have been doing their Azerbaijani wrestling, but that was thwarted by Jazza getting run down by a silent, stealthy electric car. Jim practically rubbed his hands in glee at more munitions for the anti-EV station propaganda. The painting, yes, that painting, has been sabotaged, and the trustees will be right miffed about it. One of them, Brandon, came to find out what has happened. Elizabeth took full responsibility for the damage caused, but under questioning it had to admit she had no oversight of the removal procedure herself because Freddie supervised it. The trustees are going to review when Freddie should inherit. I felt quite sorry for him for a short while, and then he turned into whiny Freddie and said he was taking his bat home and didn't want to share his sweets. Oh dear. Lillian discovered how hard finding an EV station can be. Ardil was triggered by Jazza's accident as his wife Sabha was killed in a hit-and-run incident. There is definitely more to Ardil. We want to know. There was a bit of actual farming. I know, farming at Brookfield. David and Ben were talking about it, and then Ben is going to jump into a tractor in between his ships at the Laurels. Then Ryland interrupted them as he'd got lost following his sat-nav. They took him into the farmhouse, he was bribed with Jill's cake, and they tried to get him to stay at Brookfield. Mick and Ryland are clearly best buddies. Lindy Bottom was right put out that Brookfield had been looking after him, and he was not happy that Ardil had been relocated. It was a kidnapping, no less. He relocated to Joyce, who always has rooms made up for her family. Such optimism. All is going far too well at Bridge Farm with Rocation Sunday and plans to work with Kirsty on bringing back past traditions. So time to break all of that joy up with a silent phone call into the shop. Doof, 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 as they say. Till next week then, my lovelies. Hope it's a good one.
So that was quite a packed week in Ambridge. I think Sue very much hit all the buttons there, didn't she?
There has been a lot of stuff, different stuff going on.
Yeah. Now, before we start our little discussion about the week in Ambridge, Stephen, I just wanted to ask you, because a lot of people know you as the voice of the histories, a bit of a know-it-all maybe you're able to look up things very well. But tell us about you. How long have you been listening to The Archers?
So I've been listening to The Archers as long as I can remember, because my mother used to listen, and I have a memory from probably when I was about 7 or 8, so this is the late 60s, of asking who that man with a funny voice was, the one in question being Jack Woolley, whose Brummy accent really stood out amongst the rest of them, because at that point I think pretty much all the Archers, all the main characters, were speaking very much with a received pronunciation voice, and so you just had the oddities like Tom Forrest, Walter Gabriel and Jack Woolley.
Yeah.
But I started listening on my sort of independently, as it were, I think when I was at university, so that's beginning of the 80s, And my favourite character back then was Nelson Gabriel, quite definitely. He was the sort of person I aspired to be, with that smooth, slick voice, but it didn't really turn out quite that way. But him, you know, it was all the scenes at Nelson's wine bar with Shula and Caroline and Nelson
brilliant.
Imparting his wisdom. So that's where I started from. I've had a few phases when I've sort of tuned out, and I really hated the Rob and Helen storyline. That was, I thought that really damaged the programme, because it was just too focused on that one storyline. And Kerry said when we were in Birmingham that while that was going on, they totally failed to do all the normal birth, marriages and death stuff to keep the programme going. And so they found they had a huge hole in the future storylines.
Yeah, and how do you feel about the fact that we're rumbling along with the Helen's rubbing her head problem at the moment?
Well, I think it very much is the whole bit at the moment is very much Rob in her head. So we've shown both Helen and Pat panicking on a regular basis simply because Rob is in the country. But my prediction is that Rob is not going to show up at all. That phone call at the end of Friday's episode, I'm convinced that was just somebody from a call centre or a wrong number or something like that. But we all get silent calls every so often, usually from unknown numbers. I'd have thought that if it was Helen, she'd probably... Well, I suppose Rob wouldn't necessarily be using any number that Helen knew. But why would he be doing this?
I don't know about you, but I don't answer. I don't answer calls that I don't recognise the number at all, especially if they're kind of like a weird number. What about the rest of the week in Ambridge? How did you get on with the Eurovision stuff?
I'm not a fan of the celebrity inserts. So whenever we have a storyline that involves a celebrity, it's always a bit cringe-inducing. Actually, I thought Rylan was a much better actor than he had any right to be, a lot better than... Who was the last one we had? Jackie Weaver.
Yeah, she was quite good, but I have to say I was impressed with Rylan because he just sounded like... In fact, he sounds like somebody I know who was born and brought up in Highbury and Islington and would very happily talk about a North London derby. I thought the way that, you know, the GPS... But what I took away from that whole thing was Linda's reaction. Sorry to interrupt.
No. So yes, she was incredibly competitive, but I think that's really just the way she is.
Yeah, because I don't know about you, but I go through a love-hate relationship with Linda. There are times when she has been so lovely, so vulnerable, so kind, you know, coming from a good place, like dealing with Freddie, dealing with... Oh, crumbs, I've forgotten the name of the slave who was injured and then was lost and then was found.
Blake.
And then she comes across as this person that you want to slap. She's so haughty. So good on Mick for kidnapping Rylan.
Yes, I enjoyed it. My main listening mode for The Archers is schadenfreude. I take delight in the misfortune of all the characters. So all that sort of thing works perfectly for me.
So I hope you didn't enjoy Jazza getting his ankle broken.
No, but I'm not a huge fan of Jazza, I'm afraid. I remember the ketamine days, the irresponsible milkman days. I don't join in the great Jazza love fest that seems to be happening at the moment.
I know. In fact, he's grown on me since he's been with Tracy, and he's obviously in love with her, and he's brilliant with Chelsea and Brad. But I still cringe at all those antics, as they described them on the pseudo stag night. Ugh, no, horrible. Don't like it and don't appreciate it. I don't forgive easily.
Me neither.
Right. Shall we get on to the important bit, which is you, our caller in us. From now.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Hi, Philippa and Quentin. This is Tracy from California. I haven't called in for a long time, so I'm definitely glad to hear your voices back on the air. And I know I'm too late for this week's broadcast, but my statement is global. So the storyline with Helen and Rob Titchener has been driving me bananas, because everybody keeps talking about Helen and taking control away from her. And like her attitude about it, I've never been a big fan of Helen, full disclosure, but Her whole attitude about the situation is so selfish. She's like, I want to have control. He's not going to take control and make us live our lives differently. Of course he's going to. He's a psychopath. He's already in your lives. There's nothing you can do about it. And you can't, and pretending like he's not there is not going to help. I was sad that they shut Pat down when she tried to talk some sense into Helen. And everybody was like, you got to let Helen handle it. I'm like, Helen is not the only person whose life is affected by this situation. Additionally, when Pat was like, I had a dream, I shot him. Look at what he turned me into. I'm like, what? A person who wants to protect their family by any means necessary? I think that's okay. I mean, it's like, what else are you going to do? If Rob Titchener shows up and starts trying to attack Helen or whatever he decides he's going to do, what are you going to do? Stand there and cry and tell him to stop? That's not going to do anything. Or throw cheese at him or set up a whole bunch of booby traps like your Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone? It's ridiculous. You're going to have to shoot him more than likely. Just get over it, child. Oil up your gun. And maybe this is me coming from America. I know it's a terrible thing to say, but honestly, what else are you going to do? The man is nuts and he's lost everything that's dear to him. So anyway, that's my 1 minute rant. Still love the show. Still really enjoying being in community. All right, y'all. Bye.
But in fact, that wasn't all that Tracy had to say. She came back with a little bit more. So here it is.
Okay, Tracy from California again. I'm sorry, I'm working late and this just popped up in my head. So also with this whole Helen thing, doesn't she have any rough relatives? It seems like everybody has at least one or two rough relatives tucked away somewhere. She doesn't have any cockney cousins that could go and find Rob and be like, look here, Rob, check this out. Don't go to Ambridge and don't let us catch you bothering Helen. That's all we're going to say. Just know we found you. We can find you again. Don't go to Ambridge, period. Why? You know, I mean, again, it might just be America, but I don't think so. Like, I've seen plenty of ruffians in England. You mean to tell me they don't have any rough cousins or rough somebody that could go and find him and let him know that it would behoove him to stay out of Ambridge? I'm just saying. I mean, that's a viable solution. Okay. That's my thought.
That's hilarious, Tracy. The first call, yeah, I could see where she was coming from. But the rough relatives call had me laughing out loud. What did you think of that, Stephen?
Well, yeah, I think the proposal that they should shoot Rob if he turns up is probably a bit extreme for Borchester. I think that the police don't take quite the same view of people going around shooting people as perhaps they do in some parts of the state. But yes, in that second call, Tracy was asking about whether Helen had any. Did she say Cockney cousins?
Yeah, Cockney cousins.
I think she probably does, because if you remember, her grandmother was Peggy, whose mother was Mrs. P. who was a Cockney from the East End.
Indeed.
And so I don't think Peggy had any brothers or sisters, but assuming that Mrs. P had had brothers and sisters and so forth, then Helen definitely has some Cockney third cousins. Mm. But I don't know how easily, I don't think they were in touch with them. And of course the alternative is on the other side of the family, her mother was Pat Lewis, and of Welsh background, and Pat had an uncle, Hayden Evans. So there are probably a load of Lewises and Evans somewhere in Wales. They don't see very much of them. I mean, it's one of the interesting things about the arrival of Nova and Saren and Natasha, indeed, that there's so much Welshness, but Pat never seems to talk about her own Welshness. No. But there are cousins out there.
Good. Well, let's hope that Tracy's wish comes true. I don't think it's going to happen. This is Ambridge. And this was a Kerry Davis week, so getting a little well-rounded story about everything, including Helen. And he talked to us, didn't he, in Birmingham, and talked on that podcast that Royfield put out, saying, yeah, what we like is the fact that we can see that Helen has got Rob in her head, and that is what's going to drive people crazy.
And I think we're going to come up with a bit more about Helen in a couple of more calls, including the next one from Jan in Vancouver.
Oh, hello, podcast hosts. I'm not sure who's hosting this week, so my apologies. It's Jan Mitchell calling from Vancouver, and I was listening away today to the whole Helen in the garden with David and the sneaky journalist that was talking with her, getting a sneak photo of her, as I am sure. And it occurred to me that this could cause her a lot of problems in terms of the legal thing that's going on, where they're hoping to charge Rob. If this gets out in the paper and the story is regurgitated by the journalist, I wonder, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know, but I wonder if that could make their case null and void. So that's my prediction or my concern for this coming next few weeks. That's everything. I hope everybody's well in Dumpty Dum land, and all the best.
So, Jacqueline, what did you think of the risk that that journalist is going to cause trouble?
Well, I didn't really feel that the woman journalist would go down that line with Helen. But I was very suspicious about David being there next to his cousin talking and then him trying to get the article about Brookfield. That was all going to go wrong in my mind, which by the end of the week we knew he was not happy with the outcome of that. So I don't quite agree with Jan on that one. And what about you?
The legal issue at the moment is whether or not they can prosecute Rob for the attempted abduction of Jack.
And how long ago was that?
Now you're asking. It must have been 4 or 5 years ago. How old was he at the time? I can't remember.
I can't remember either. Gosh, we're showing that you are showing your lack of knowledge. I'm known for it.
No, it's my problem is with time. Yeah. With COVID, I've completely lost track of how long ago things were. And I think something was 2 years ago. It turns out it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think a lot of us have got that kind of 2-year black hole.
So I don't think there's anything that the reporter can report that's going to be problematic, because everything that the reporter knows is public knowledge anyway. I mean, Helen's trial and so forth. So I don't think that Jan needs to worry unduly about the risk.
No,
that.
I agree. There's one thing about the Helen and Bridge Farm and the publicity. They've had this the illuminations. They've had open days. They've had they're having the Rogation Sunday, the beating of the bounds on this coming Sunday. I'm very concerned about this organic farm and how many people are wandering over it. So, and that's a concern at the back of my mind. I know a lot of people on social medias are concerned about whether Rob's going to be coming, appear in the window or become a visitor or whatever. But if we just put the Rob story aside, I'm concerned about, you know, biosecurity on the farm. That's a question, isn't it?
Yeah, and this whole Rogation Sunday thing. As you say, Rogation Sunday, the big tradition of Rogation Sunday is beating the bounds of the parish.
Not just a farm.
So having it not just a farm, exactly. I remember it was 1999 that they certainly had a Rogation story with Janet walking the bounds of all four parishes, which was quite a long walk.
A marathon.
I think she was involved in some other march at the time and was planning doing 20 miles a day. But the bounds of the four parishes combined is pretty big. So quite what they're doing on Bridge Farm,
Hosting nibbles and drinks, I think, at the end. That'll be it. But we shall see on Sunday, shan't we?
Yes. Shall we move on to our next caller?
Indeed.
And this is a first-time caller in.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. My name is Paula, and I'm calling from Philadelphia. This is my first time calling in, and following the old-school rules, I'll state my vintage is, I think the sperm donor who begat Henry Archer, and for work I'm a professor of sociology. I also want to say a quick thanks to Witherspoon for organizing our American meetup a few weeks ago, and thank all of the Dumpty Dum hosts for keeping a good thing going. So I'm calling in defense of Lee. I realize this may be an unpopular position, but I have a hard time understanding what makes him so objectionable. To me, he's a man who values honesty and transparency, and that's exactly what Helen needs. It seems like he messed up his first marriage and has achieved the self-awareness to do better in his current relationship. He genuinely loves Helen and he treats her as an equal partner, and it seems like he does his share of the household labor. He's stepped pretty convincingly into the role of being a father figure to Henry and Jack and seems to have earned their trust. And I think most critically, he's a model of confident masculinity. He isn't afraid to express his feelings, and he isn't afraid of Helen's feelings. Other men in Ambridge are similarly evolved, including Harris and Paul and maybe increasingly Jazzer, but only Lee seems to be regarded as weak. So, I mean, is it because of the superhero collection? I mean, what a small price to pay to have a caring partner. I think we've all recognized that the script writers have been trying to tackle the topic of men's unmet mental health needs through the storylines about Will, Grundy's grief, and Ben's response to Chelsea's pregnancy. And the script writers have also used Vince, George, and Rob to demonstrate the corrosive impact of toxic masculinity. So I appreciate that Lee is there to balance things out, but I remain very curious to hear from the rest of you what it is I'm missing that makes him so unappealing. So please do tell. Thanks again.
Are you a fan, Stephen?
A fan of Lee?
Hmm.
No. Now, Paula is a professor of sociology and is approaching this from a very sensible, objective viewpoint and sees all the good features, the objectively good features about Lee, the fact that he's not loaded down with toxic masculinity, the fact that he's evolved, as she said, though interestingly she suggested that Jazzer was also evolved, and I'm really not convinced that he is.
I think she said he was evolving.
Yes, I think he's still got a long way to go. He's probably somewhere in the Permian period, which is even before the dinosaurs. But anyway, so I come at it in a different way, which is entirely subjective and prejudiced, and basically I can't get over the white trainers.
That's interesting, because in fact I don't object to Lee. I feel quite positive about him. I think he is a positive role model for those boys, which they definitely need, because otherwise they've got Tom, who's, as far as I can see, is their uncle, is very hands-off, apart from they've tried to connect them a bit recently since he's become a father. Tony is obviously been very involved with the Henry and Jack in their lives, but a grandfather who's actually a bit of a doddery man and had his own health problems, and I don't think so. I'm very pleased that Lee's there as a good role model for the future generation. I don't know how he puts up with Helen, because my thoughts on Helen are well known. Sorry, Witherspoon. And I can see where she's coming from, Paula, because it's a very good, well thought out argument. Could have made an academic Archer's paper, that one.
Absolutely, a very professional approach to it.
Thank you for being a first time caller in a row, Paula. Delighted to hear from you, and delighted that you got to go to that meetup. So now you know the inside of my ear intimately as I tried to hear what everybody was saying. So there we go. Call in again, please.
Yes, please do. And now we'll go from a first time caller in a to one of our regular caller in a rows. It's Jen.
Greetings, everyone in Dumdy Dumland. Jen calling in, and apologies if you hear any irate chihuahuas in the background. Just thinking about the week, we had a slightly unusual week. Jazzer had a Tuesday cliffhanger, and fortunately it's no worse than a broken ankle, but why did we have to have drama around that? Why, you know, why can't Jazzer and Tracy, who haven't had a lot nice happening lately, have something good, have an enjoyable wedding, have a smooth run up to it? Maybe even have that Ambridge fairy that goes around dropping money everywhere, you know. Perhaps Julian would have given them the bull for free, as personally I think she should have done. Maybe they would have won something at one of these blooming wedding fairs, that they got a really nice package for the wedding or a honeymoon or just something nice. I mean, does it have to be unremittingly awful for the lower class characters all the time? And I do think there's a bit of a class thing there. Thinking about it, it's really like Tracy and Jazzer are being stepped up to be the Eddie and Clary, where every time they think they've got life straight or something good's happening, they have to be hit by something miserable. And I think we're meant to take pleasure in that or find it funny, or I don't know what it is, but I don't like it. And I would like to see just some nice, happy storylines, particularly for the lower class characters. And I really hope that Chelsea and Brad, two of the nicest kids in the village, are allowed to go on in their lives and get their degree, maybe become, you know, maybe Brad could be the very, very much needed farm accountant, business advisor that the village has been crying out for. Let Chelsea have a thriving hairdressing business and let them buy nice houses and progress and have an easier life than Tracy, and not have this thing where people are just trapped like the Grundys forever.
Well, yes, I completely agree with Jen. Well, I want some happy, happy storylines. Why has Jasdan managed to break his ankle and they're talking, you know, he can't work? He's already cheesed off Martin just before his accident. But I feel very cross as well. Sorry, Kerry, if you're listening.
I can understand why we get this situation. I think, I mean, obviously, we need to have drama, and misfortune gives us drama. And I think we need to have big strategic drama. And the obvious one there is, which we haven't touched on this week at all, but it'll probably come back soon, is the future of Home Farm, the fact that the succession is completely unplanned and so forth. So that's a really big, strategic, dramatic story playing out over a long period of time. But we need also to have tactical drama to keep the things going on and on. And it's a lot easier to have tactical drama with these characters who don't have big things around them. They're not running a farm or a stately home. They're just living small everyday lives like the vast majority of us. And the only way you can get drama there is by having misfortune, because good fortune just doesn't give you the drama, the dramatic stuff that you need. So I think that that's the case. One thing though I was going to say about the Horribins this week, Brad going to the pub with Tracy. That was very odd. I mean, yes, he's been grounded, but isn't Brad the sort of boy who would ground himself, even if there's nobody there to oversee him? He's genuinely sorry for what he did, so he's going to do his bit without having to be dragged to the pub.
Yeah, I thought that was very weird. In fact, I didn't understand it. I think that Tracy could have shown more trust in Brad and not taken him to the pub with her. I mean, there's nowhere worse to do your homework than in a pub, surely. So I want to be in a silent room.
Well, there we are.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, the best and easiest way for you to record a message or a plot prediction is to go to www.speakpipe.com/dumptydum. And don't forget, it's a T in the middle. And you'll also find a link in the show notes.
Or you can send us a voice note via WhatsApp on +447957167696. Now, next week, Philippa and Katie shall be recording because I'm away at a wedding. And Dumpty Dum is going to be recording on Saturday. So please, can we have calls and emails in by Friday night again? Sorry, this really cuts out people from the omnibus listen along, but it's just the way the cookie's crumbling at the moment. Please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes and bear in mind you need to be at least 18 to take part.
And we need your help. There are three things you can do. First of all, if you haven't already, hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcast streamer you use. So please do that right now.
Secondly, give us a review. It'd be hugely appreciated, especially if it's on Apple Podcasts, because that helps us. And of course, a 5-star review always goes down well. But no matter how many stars you give us, we will always try to mention them on the podcast. Finally, the third thing is that you could consider becoming a Patreon. Patreon is a way of tipping creators, and there are different levels with different rewards. If you just go to patreon.com and search for Dumb Tea Dumb. Now, I'd be delighted to have your support. You can also go to dumdydum.com, our own website, and hit the donate button for a one-off donation. So, shall we go back to our calls now, Stephen?
Yep, and next up is Rob Williams.
Hello there, Jacqueline and Stephen and Dumpty Dummers around the world. Rob Williams speaking. Congratulations, Stephen, on your Dumpty Dum debut. Well, it's not really a debut because you were there at the live thing, weren't you? But debut as host, I'm sure you all know what I mean. Again, I'm speaking pretty much without notes, much in the same way that I sing. I was just thinking, there was the big kerfuffle at Birmingham. Sonny and Kerry couldn't understand why people hated Helen. And to be honest, I think she demonstrated it tonight. They were watching some film or other. I could just hear the violins going in the background. So it was obviously a tense moment. And Kirsty says, the last time I saw this film, it was with my convicted slave-dealing husband, former husband, who's now inside at His Majesty's pleasure. To which Helen said, nothing. Until Kirsty had to say, if you don't want to watch it, we'll stop. Again, Kirsty is just saying how she's been through this horrendous trauma, da-da-da-da-da, and her friend just sits there and thinks of her. That possibly is why we don't like her. I mean, I know, what's her name, Louisa Petikus, who plays Helen, is probably a wonderful person and very delightful in real life, but she plays Helen really well, she's written really well, and we all just don't like her. Sorry, that's the way it goes. Anywho, oh, and also sorry to Witherspoon, him saying that we should be kinder to her. She doesn't do herself any favours, really. Mind you, having said that, I can see this going the same way as George. I'll probably phone up in the middle of the week, rotten drunk, and say how, actually, she's wonderful. Take care all. Bye.
Yeah, brilliant call. Thank you, Rob. Now, Rob sent that message in on Messenger, a voice note. It's actually preferable to us for getting it onto the show if you can send messages into our WhatsApp number or via the SpeakPipe button or on our website. So I can't really say anything more about the Helen story. I think everybody knows how I feel about her. So do you want to add anything?
I was just wondering, I think I tend to agree with Rob about Helen, but maybe at the moment this is all part of the showing how affected Helen is by the fear of Rob, and so that she was watching the film with Kirsty, but her mind was completely elsewhere. But yeah, no, I wouldn't want to come across in any way as sympathetic towards Helen, because fundamentally I'm not. So we'll move from one Welshman to another one.
Bryn Houndard, Empty Dummers, and whoever's presenting the podcast this week. Bisima Eto, it's David from Carmarthenshire. Well, I was calling in to say what a dire week it's been on the Archers. I'm so sick of this whole Eurovision storyline. As a lifelong fan of the competition, it's managed to suck all of the joy out of it for me this year, and I can't wait for it to be over. Certainly, everybody in the Archers loves Eurovision. We've never heard that before. And also this idea that people are going to be falling over themselves to take part in some stupid competition. Well, in the village where I live in rural Wales, we have to be marched at gunpoint to the village hall to do anything except the ice deadwood and young farmers and clog dancing. People are just too busy. They haven't got the time. And somebody like Linda would have been run out of town with a pitchfork years ago. Nobody would put up with that in this day and age. But anyway. So all of the holes in the Eurovision plot line have been well rehearsed on Facebook and Twitter this week, I see. So I won't go into those again. But anyway, I was calling to say what a terrible week it's been. But it actually redeemed itself at the last minute. We've had the Freddy storyline, and we've had a tantalising glimpse of Ardil's backstory. Now, where was Helen that night when poor Ardil's wife was mowed down at the bus stop? I wonder where she could have been. She's got form in that department. Just ask my Tucker. And as for poor Freddy, wasn't life simpler when people bought their paintings from Boots? What he needs is a nice scene of white horses running along the seashore at midnight. That would make life a whole lot easier for him, wouldn't it? Anyway, looking forward to next week, resumption of normality when this song contest is over, we can all get back to normal. Anyway, diolch yn fawr, hwyl am y tro. Bye.
Thank you, David. Yes, I agree with David to a certain extent that the Ardil and the Freddy storylines definitely, plus for me, the Rylan story at the very end of the Rylan story, his arrival, that last episode, definitely rounded off the week nicely. But I haven't been upset by the Eurovision competition thing. And I live in a village about the size of Ambridge. And last night we had one of our annual village events. And you get free drinks if you go disguised. So, of course, a lot of people do go disguised. And it was a very, very good evening. And I've just put a post on Instagram. So if anybody follows me on Instagram, you can see what life is like for normal people in St Gwen on a Friday evening, only once a year.
But David is right. I don't remember, and I can't find any trace of Eurovision ever having been featured on The Archers before. But then Harrison is a relatively newcomer, and a lot of the enthusiasm is coming from a combination of Harrison and Paul, who is brand new, and it's just Linda is getting looped in. And I can imagine that Linda is the sort who, while she keeps very little of herself private, would keep any love of Eurovision, perhaps between just her, Robert, and maybe Lillian. So that's a fair point. I thought the Ardil stuff was interesting. It's one of the first things we've actually heard about Ardil that sort of makes him a character in his own right. As for the painting and Freddie, I think we'll may get on to Freddie in a bit and the discussion of the trust and so forth. But when it comes to white horses galloping along a seashore, I think while Russ was at Lower Loxley, that sort of thing would have been frowned upon very much. And I think even now, certainly I'd frown upon it. I can't imagine Elizabeth really wanting sort of Jack Vetriano type paintings on the walls.
Indeed, and no Siamese ladies with flowers behind their ears either. So, who are we hearing from next?
We are hearing from a very long-standing friend of the show. Here he comes.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, this is Witherspoon here without Angus Haggis, sitting here in Washington Square Park with two special guests. First, we have Amy from the Upper Upper West Side, and we have Bernadette all the way from Margate, England. So I'm going to pass the phone to them so they can say hello.
Hi, everybody. This is Amy, who's been spending so much time following actual Eurovision that I haven't paid full attention to the Archers version. But happy to talk to you all and to be meeting Bernadette for the first time.
Hello, this is Bernadette, Archers fan 2015, and I'm so pleased to be here with Witherspoon and Amy. And I haven't really been listening to the Archers because I can't stand the Eurovision stuff at the moment.
And yet we get along fine.
And it's Witherspoon again just saying I thought Freddie had a particularly bad week. I know they didn't treat him so well, but he threw a little hissy fit and he seems rather entitled. So let's put a microscope to him instead of to Helen. And I think I don't like what Jim is doing. I hope he doesn't turn anti-electric vehicle as opposed to just regular old NIMBY, not in my backyard. But we'll see. This is being recorded before Friday's episode, so we don't know what's going to happen to conclude the week. So I'll conclude by saying, talk to you soon.
Sounds like they were having a good time in Washington Square.
Isn't he brilliant, Witherspoon? Any of us that end up going through New York, we can manage to meet up with him. He spends a lot of time, considering he was introduced to the Archers by handsome husband. He seems to have taken over their half of their household with his Dumpty Dum and Archers fandom, which is brilliant. So, what about Freddie?
When Brandon first appeared, I was quite drawn to him because he outed himself as a fan of prog rock, which is what I am, more so than, say, standard Eurovision stuff. I am a bit concerned, though, that the trustees are talking about amending things so that Freddie doesn't inherit at 25. I think we've got some more calls coming up, which will cover that, so we might go into a bit more detail. But I'm not sure how easy it would be for the trustee to do that. But what I can say is that Freddie, certainly his reaction demonstrated that he wasn't really in a fit state to take on the running of a place like Lower Loxley.
Indeed, I think I thought his, as Witherspoon said, it's a bit of a hissy fit. It sounded very juvenile, and I think the fact that he isn't qualified to do anything. I mean, Lily is doing a course on estate management. I mean, he's doing practical things, working in the shop and organising things in the restaurant, etc., and with the volunteers. But he's not actually doing anything about the management. And surely the head of Lower Loxley has to be. Even Nigel took on the management and development of Lower Loxley at the time. So it'd be interesting to see.
Yes, I agree. And I think that while Lily is learning how to run an estate like that, she's always going to be at risk because Freddie could have another hissy fit and sack her on the spot. And I think we've discussed in the past that's what happened at Longleat. And it wasn't much fun for the brother who was actually running the place when he was just sacked. So I think Lily's always going to be at risk of that.
But hopefully Freddie won't turn out to be quite as eccentric as that, as the Marquis of Bath.
Let's hope not.
Well, I might. You might be fun for...
Wifelets and so forth. A very strange setup.
It was. But in fact, that might be quite fun for us.
It might be. Comic drama at Lower Loxley. Anyway, shall we move on to our next
call?
Yes,
definitely.
Hi, Dum Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. Well, what an interesting week in Ambridge. Let's get our tiny violins out, shall we? First tiny violin of the week, David Archer. Seriously, get a grip. Like, nobody cares about the byline on a photo in a local newspaper and whether it implies that you work at a different farm from the one you actually work at. No one cares. Give it up. Tiny Violin 2 goes to Ben and Linda for squabbling over Rylan and then not getting to host him after all. You know, that's also not the end of the world. What a bizarre encounter that whole thing was. Where was he coming from? Had he walked from the train station? Was he in the car? Who knows? And then my tiny violin 4 goes to Freddie because he might not get to inherit at 25. Maybe he'll get to inherit later. His mum's still hale and hearty. I'm not sure it's a massive issue. It's all a very strange thing. And we do need an explainer, please, from Stephen about the machinations of a trustee arrangement and who can decide what and how. And yeah, there's a lot of confusion about that. And I wouldn't mind someone laying it out. So that would be fun. No tiny violins for Jazza, who's genuinely hurt himself. Really sorry to hear that. I suppose a tiny violin for Martin Gibson for getting attacked by a protective pig. Who knows? Let's hope that after the Eurovision stuff, this whole thing will calm down and stop being so nonsensical. And let's get back to some proper storylines. But I'd rather Rob didn't show up just yet. I think this endless kind of, oh, is it him? Is it him? Is it him? Is like starting to lodge in all of our minds, and that's a worry. Keep up the work, speak to you.
And there she goes.
Well, I have to say that I think Claire's coming from a similar place to me with all these little stories. Freddie, it irritated me. It was an interesting story, and it was very interesting with, as you said, the accountant, the trustee. But I think that's a future project for you there, Stephen. 2-minute histories about trusts and Lower Loxleys.
Yes, well, as Usher might say, it's not really my area of expertise, the mechanics of trust arrangements and so forth. What I do understand, the main point is that that trust was set up to carry out Nigel's wishes after his death. So I think that the trustees would need a really good reason to do anything that appeared to depart from Nigel's wishes. And if those wishes were that Freddie should inherit at 25, then the fact that he's not very good at it is not, I think, a sufficient reason for the trust to turn around and do stuff. They would have to find him, I don't know, clinically insane or something like that. They'd need to have a really positive reason, because the balance would be on the trust, you know, them having an obligation to carry out what Nigel would have wished. And frankly, yes, Freddie is hopeless, but Nigel was pretty hopeless at that age as well.
Indeed, yeah. It is really father-like, son-like father. So the other thing is, I can assure you, Claire, that Rylan did arrive in a car because he apologised about the tyre marks. So that solved that little mystery. But we already talked about the Ben and Linda squabbling over Rylan, so I don't think we need to go there anymore. And what was the other thing? Jazza, she feels sorry that it was genuinely been hurt. So,
Well, he did break his ankle. I was expecting it to be Rylan that had actually mown him down. but instead it turns out to be some random person, but in an electric vehicle just to give Jim a chance to get on a high horse.
Yeah, because we haven't really talked much about Jim and his reaction. He's definitely been NIMBYist now. He's been anti-electric cars as well as anti the station, the charging station. So I'm not enjoying that storyline.
No, I think we'll have to see how it pans out. There's room for plenty of conflict between Jim and Justin, and Justin was pretty underhand in setting up the whole arrangement. But I think that Jim appears to be losing support in the village. I think he's only really got Susan left on his side in his campaign.
What a team, eh?
Absolutely.
Right. Only plotting in the store cupboard.
It's time for our final call.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here. The good news is, by the time you hear this, the Eurovision shenanigans on the Archers will be over. Don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of Eurovision, but I am not a fan of Eurovision Archers shenanigans. Next, let's deal with Friday's cliffhanger. Was that Rob? No, it was almost certainly something like one of these call centre farms where they send out about 10 or 100 scam calls at the same time and just answer the one that picks up first. And if Helen had picked up slightly earlier, she would have been probably asked for her bank details or her Microsoft account number or something similar. No, it wasn't Rob. So the main thing for me for the week was Freddie, and I think he's probably been hard done by the trustees. I would like to understand a bit more about the trust deed and what the trustees are actually supposed to be doing, what their duties is, but of course we won't hear that. No doubt, you know, Freddie could possibly take a legal action against them, but I must admit, when he starts whining, my sympathy for him drops very dramatically and suddenly. I think it would be a good idea if he went somewhere quite a long, long way away from Ambridge for a while to learn about managing an estate, for example, and that would do him and us a great deal of good. Right, thank you for the podcast and speak to you again soon. Bye.
Thank you for that, Glyn. Good to hear from you. I think Glyn has just confirmed that everything that we've already said about the Freddie thing, including the not liking his whining and the Eurovision thing. You know, I'm a fan of Eurovision, but not in the Archers. So, you know, I think we're all singing from the same songbook here, Glyn, probably apart from Witherspoon.
Absolutely. Right. So now let's hear what our social media gurus have been talking about on the Dumpty Dum Facebook page, with our Philippa, who had to step in at last minute for Julia, who lost her voice, and Julia was actually stepping in for me. So thank you very much, Philippa. Let's hear what you have.
Hello, you lovely lot. Well, Stephen's a little bit busy hosting the episode this week, so you've got me, Philippa, reporting for Facebook duty. Are you ready? So what have we been talking about this week? Well, frankly, there wasn't enough food chat, which I found very disappointing. Come on, you lot. Claire Hinckley admitted she was struggling to listen to the Archers at the moment, and others were feeling her pain. Pam Dooley reassured us that things will calm down after the Eurovision. Let's hope. There was much discussion about Freddie. Personally, I'm a fan. It seems most people on the planet are not. There were particular questions about his maturity, although Leo Horsemeyer made the point that the trustees have to demonstrate why Freddie is not up to running Lower Loxley when he reaches 25. Not being very qualified, or he's a bit of a twit, is nowhere near enough to stop the control being passed to Freddie. Jan Mitchell was wondering who was driving the electric car that bashed Jazza. Who indeed, Jan? Heather Lovibond and Carol Walker had spotted a feature on The One Show on BBC One about Rylan visiting the Archers, and there was some discussion about how members of the cast didn't look as we imagined them. Isn't that always the way? Rob Williams found a source of lemon drizzle cake gin, and Jacqueline Berto quickly brought it to my attention. I'm off soon to acquire several bottles. Rob was also speculating on who might have slashed the painting, and suggestions from everyone included Russ, Rob Titchener, Mia, Lewis and Elizabeth. However, Louise Lawton suggested Professor Plum with a candlestick in the library. Victoria Bourne had had enough with the Ryland storyline, as she couldn't see that Ryland could or would agree to visiting Ambridge at such a busy time for him. Witherspoon was happy that when he listens to the Archers on a Monday, he gets to listen to just a minute first. Gordon Bevaird responded that the Archers is all hesitation, repetition and deviation. Glyn Fullerlove was wondering why Eddie would choose Leonard for a comedy partner. They haven't exactly spoken to each other much. There were discussions about the Eurovision. Lara Jackson noticed that she hadn't even seen Rylan on the television yet. There was talk about the Croatia act and the one from Switzerland. However, I recalled this before Friday's episode of The Archers, so I imagine there will be a great deal more to see in the Facebook group now. So head there and have a look at everyone's reactions to what happened on the Friday episode. Thanks, you lovely lot. See you next week.
Thank you very much, Philippa, for that. And thank you also to everyone who's posted their thoughts on the Dumpty Dum Facebook group. And now it's time to welcome the 11 new members to that group.
Yes, a very warm welcome to the lovely Janet Binky Lipton,
Joe Cardwell,
Kate Spencer,
Sheena Hutchinson,
Angela Kelly,
Deborah Kutzko,
Julia Hansen,
Sarah Kate Merry, who I met for the first time in face-to-face in Birmingham, but we've been talking for a long while.
Oh, that's nice. Gaynor Hassel,
Jock Urquhart,
and Vicky Krask.
And so we go from our caller-innerers to our email-innerers. Now we have two messages this week.
Yes, the first one says, "Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen and Dum-de-dummers everywhere. It's Andrea from beautiful Brittany. Firstly, thank you, Stephen, for your two-minute explainers. Keep them coming. I know a lot of the week has been taken up with where Ryland will be laying his head, but I've been thinking about more serious matters. The slashed painting. I'm annoyed at Lizzie for asking Freddie more than once if he did it. I have a plot prediction. It was the Lower Loxley ghost. At first, I thought it could be the ghost of Julia, but she wouldn't be bothered by a little old ship. So I think it must be dear Nigel. He's found a way to come back. Hurrah! Obviously, Nigel would be as upset as Freddie that the Pargeters benefited from slavery, although if he'd stopped to think about it at any moment, it's a pretty good bet that a stately home and money came from such sources. I used to feel smug coming from a long line of peasants, that my ancestors had nothing to do with the transatlantic slave trade, but in recent years, more information has been available, or perhaps I've just been more aware of it. The podcast Human Resources by Moya Lothian McLean highlights how it wasn't just slave owners and traders who benefited. Black country chains and iron were most definitely used, not just the manufacturer who advertised himself as Negro collar and handcuff maker, but also chains, nails, guns, swords and agricultural tools. The population of plantations rose from 300,000 in 1700 to over 3 million by 1776. That is a lot of iron. This is a report by Dr. Angela Osborne in 2022. So, although my ancestors couldn't afford a stately home, they probably worked in the iron industry, which paid for a roof over their heads and food for their families, so I can no longer be too smug about not having a home like Lower Loxley. Have a good week, everyone. Ta-ra-ra bit, Babs.
That was a great email from Andrea. And I actually feel the same way about connections to the slave trade. My Bowden ancestors were fairly poor cotton workers in Derbyshire, and they certainly didn't own mills, but they did make their living from working with cotton that in the earlier days was grown and harvested by enslaved people.
I'm sure that my ancestors in Immingham and surrounding areas were involved in some connection as well. But in fact, Immingham is famous for being one of the stopping places for the Pilgrim Fathers. So perhaps we're even more guilty for moving people from this continent to another.
Indeed. Anyway, we have a first-time emailer-innerer, which is from Jill. Hello, Dumpty Dummers. It's Jill here from North Somerset, a first-time emailer-innerer. I'm a long-term listener to The Archers, having discovered its joys in the mid-70s as part of my slightly unconventional teenage rebellion. No one else in my family listens, so since discovering the podcast last year, I've loved hearing everyone's musing on events in Ambridge. I'm not a social media user, so apologies if my observations this week have already been much discussed. In the wake of the coronation, I noticed media coverage calling for a change in our national anthem to something less dirge-like and more celebratory. I was immediately reminded of an old Billy Connolly routine in which he put forward exactly the same idea and imagined just how much more successful we could be as a nation with a more upbeat tune to inspire us. His suggestion? Change it to the Archers theme tune. After hearing the rousing rendition from the Birmingham meetup, I'm inclined to agree with him. Have a good week, Jill.
Well, I love that idea, and it really just goes along a bit with all our versions, especially your versions and Marie Bray's versions of the Dum-de-Tums that we've heard over the years. Yeah, great idea, Jill, and great to hear from you. Thank you.
And the great thing is that there are no official words, so we can make them up each time to fit the occasion.
Very good point, Mr. Bowden.
Anyway, did we receive any reviews this week?
Yes, we have. Now, we're still playing catch-up after Birmingham, so we have several reviews which we have received in the last month. And so this first one is not very positive, but it's from a very anonymous person, N-C-H-I-S-J-G-Y-C-I-E-B-D-O, that's their username, via Apple Podcasts. They gave us 2 stars, and they say, and this was posted on the 17th of April, so it could be about several people, not just me and Royfield, but I'm assuming it's about me and Royfield because I'm like that. Not the same. I used to listen every week to this podcast and really enjoyed it. But what the hell has happened? Slow, unfunny conversations, presenters who seem to not know enough about the Archers to be able to speak at length on any of the characters anymore, and general banter is at an all-time low. I think time for me to move on to other Archers podcasts. It's been good while it lasted.
The second review came from Paul Newman and was much more positive, and we received 5 stars. And it goes like this. Best ever. This 2-part mashup special was the best ever. Laughter, tears, the fabulous Sonny and godlike Kerry, along with R, J, P and Q, and Katie, who gave me a name check in part one. It had everything, and I am so proud to be part of this global family. And that's from Polly Perks, or Paul Newman.
Ah, that's nice.
Yes, much better. So more like that, please. Now, let's see what Theo, our purple pumpkin, has found to entertain us on Twitter this week with her Tweets of the Week.
Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with a selection of Tweets of the Week. And my thanks as ever to everyone who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. Please do keep them coming. The Archers on Twitter this week has been preoccupied with 3 topics. At least 2 of which I think Philippa would approve of. Jen, Ambridge Pony Club, had everyone discussing their favourite type of cake and their favourite filling for toasted sandwiches. For Kirsty's birthday, of course. Though there's some mighty long and heated threads. Meanwhile, Glyn Fullerlove, at Glyn12GH, asked if Pat had mistaken Jazza for Rob and given him both boars. A lot of people suggested who those 2 boars might be. Adam and Helen, Adam and Tom, Tom and Tony, and so on. But Angela Dobb at LMS Bossy pointed out that if it's a 12-bore shotgun, it'll have 2 barrels, and that makes 24 bores, which is more than the allotted speaking parts per week in the Archers. And so we move to my medals for Tweets of the Week, with some regret that these are being compiled before the glorious Omnibus Tweet-Along on Sunday. I'm resisting the urge to sing a second time in a row, so I'll simply recite the bronze medal offering from James A. at Exeter Dormouse, who has the Brookfield clan singing, "There's a sad sort of clanging from the clock in the hall and the pips on Radio 4, and out in the farmyard an archer with a scowl is popping out to say, oh no, oh no." You can sing along for yourself if you'd like to. In silver, it's a double header. First, Eliza Bennett at Eliza Bennett 3 asked, "Oh my, did we know about Ardil's dead wife before today?" There were many replies, but James Kintbury at James Kintbury offered, "I suspect a scriptwriter only recently thought about it and decided it would be a good plot development." To which Eliza replied, "Poor Ardil's wife, not only dead, but an afterthought." And my gold medal goes to Catherine Ramsey, at kramsey1997, who says, "Ardil has arrived, a storyline all of his own, not related to any existing member of the cast. It's a bit like passing the Archer's Bechdel test. So while you all go and look up the Bechdel test, I'll say that's it for this week. See you all on Twitter next time.
Do you know what the Bechdel test is?
Oh, I do. It's when you have... Shall I explain it? Or...
Yes, please do. Please do.
Okay, so
I've no idea.
It's based on it's in films, and the film passes the Bechdel test if it contains a scene in which there are two named female characters who have a conversation, and that conversation isn't about men.
We're here to educate you, not me, him. So, well, thank you for that, Theo, and congratulations to all of those who are mentioned in Purple Pumpkins Roundup, but especially those medal winners, James A. Exeter Dormouse, Liza Bennett III, James Kintbury, and the gold medal winner, K. Ramsey, 1997. As you know, we're all on Twitter, and you can find us at DumtyDum, where you can join in the tweet-along fun by using the hashtag TheArchers with a capital T and a capital A, which helps the visually impaired to join in the fun. And I can be found on Twitter as at JBertoSanguen. How about you, Stephen?
I can be found at Wenlock House. And just going back to that review, which said that we didn't know what we were talking about, I have just been racking my brains about the abduction and when it was that we discussed earlier, and it was 6 years ago, just over 6 years ago. It was in the beginning of 2017. So anybody who's planning to call in about that, sorry, I've shot your fox. Anyway.
Good for you. Good for you, Stephen.
Don't forget, we are on Instagram at Dumpty Dum, which is run by the very lovely Katie. So do follow us there.
Do you have an Instagram account?
I have an Instagram account, but I don't use it, so I don't post anything.
Oh, jolly good. And you can find me on Instagram. I'm simply Jacqueline Berto. It remains just to say thank you as ever to all our lovely contributors, to our social media supremos. And as ever, we also thank Shambridge for her voices and to our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Royfield Brown. And I'd like to thank you, Stephen. It's been great. I know that you've got the edit to do now, and I wish you success with it. But thank you for joining me and taking over the technical side, because I really am rubbish at it.
Thank you. No, I've really enjoyed hosting. I just hope that our listeners have enjoyed it when they hear it as much as we have when recording it. And as for the editing, I think we ran pretty smoothly, so it won't be a very major job to do.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you. And I hope this isn't just a cameo appearance a la Rylan, and you'll come back another day with me.
I will be happy to come back and do it again sometime.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye. And bye, everybody.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.